Heroes are an inspiring group of people. Every one of them, from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen to the everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell. The doctor saving lives at your local hospital. The war veteran down the street who risked his lives for our freedom. The police officers and firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur. The creator. The producer. The ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what? I can fix that. I can help people. And I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks of the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence, so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1. Okay, welcome to the Hero Show. I am here with Rebecca Hannan from Type in Mind, and you work with business personality types and entrepreneurial personality types. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Type in Mind is and what it is that you guys do for your customers?
Yeah, so we're basically a kind of coaching slash consulting company, and everything we do is centered around the idea of personality type, and not necessarily the typical sense you would think of here's, you know, a couple different dimensions and you're either way over here or way over there and we're going to shove you in that box and then, you know, kind of push you along your way, but really kind of digging into, you know, exactly like what makes a person the way that they are, and really looking at it in detail. People tend to say we do it in a very holistic way, and they actually feel like we're describing them as a whole person instead of describing a little box to put them in. Mm-hmm. And we have onboarding services to help people integrate new people into their team. We do team dynamic stuff, and we also just help leaders on their own with personal growth kind of stuff.
So when you're working with your customers, what is, like, you know, because I know when I think personality types, I know how powerful it can be from a psychology standpoint, but when your customers are coming to you, what is the problem that they have that you're going to say, we're going to discuss these personality things and here's like the end result? What is it that you're going to actually like help them do? Is it going to make their business more profitable, make their teams work better? What is it? What is the end result that you generally are going for?
Yeah, generally, I mean, so we also do a little bit of marketing stuff. We haven't done as much yet, but okay, if it's marketing specific, it's usually looking at, okay, what is your main customer persona? I'm very heavy on like actual data and analytics and not just guessing, so I might dig into their data a little bit and kind of look at, you know, existing customers, maybe even talk with them, you know, dialogue a little bit. And then I'm kind of mapping out, like, here's what your customer looks like. And I kind of can say, here's what you're hitting really well with, your copy, you know, your videos, even the style that you're communicating in. You know, maybe they're really strongly saying like, you have to call us and you have to buy now. Well, that doesn't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. And especially if the, you know, it's a certain type of industry, then maybe you're missing like 90% of the people. So I kind of look for holes and kind of problem solve where they're kind of missing stuff. And then more on the team side, it's really just, you know, it's often, how do we make these people work together? So, you know, sometimes it's not really like, oh, we want the whole team to have it, but just these two people, we really like both of them and they do their job well, but they don't work together and we kind of need them to. So how can we get them to understand each other and kind of find some kind of middle ground where they're at least not, you know, fighting or that kind of thing.
So if I understand correctly, you help on both the customer side so that they can get their marketing right and they can get their message right in front of the right customers so that they can be more profitable. And then you help the team on the other side to work together better so they can build better products and build better services for their customers. And really, so it's like a holistic approach to how personality fits into a business.
And, you know, often they will come for one thing and then end up, you know, wanting six other things because they just, you know, for, you know, and not everyone does, but when they really get it and it starts to kind of click in their mind, they're like, wait, can we use it for this too? And we're like, yeah, totally, you know. So it just depends. Some people are like, just get me this thing and then let's be done. And I'm like, cool, that's good with me. But it's kind of fun to see when it really clicks for people and they start to kind of have their own revelations from it as well.
Yeah, well, it's really cool because one of the things that one of the topics that keeps popping up on this show with several of the other people we've interviewed is how business is really, it's part of the human experience, and the human experience is built on stories and getting to know each other. And it's all about people and individuals. And understanding how important an individual's personality is in the sales conversation or in that team environment is just, it's really powerful.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I had one guy, and you know, he isn't like hugely into this, but, and I mean, I wasn't even the person that kind of got him into it, but we kind of connected. I've been working for Perry for 3.5 years, Perry Marshall, and he was like, hey, you guys talk about personality to me. Maybe you should talk to each other. And so I was talking to him, and he said, you know, there's this guy called Dr. Grant, and he's got a PhD in psychology, fascinating guy, talks a lot about personality. And Dave had kind of like learned from him. He's kind of his apprentice. And he said, you know, I was realizing my entire sales funnel was built around expecting people to be more of these extroverted types. Uh-huh. And so just by having that click and realizing I'm leaving out all the introverts who want time to think through stuff, he got a 30% boost in his sales that did not drop. So he, you know, he kind of saw the lift and it stayed there consistently after he changed his marketing messages to incorporate the people that also want to have a little bit of time. So giving them a couple days to decide rather than saying, if you don't decide now, then that's it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's all, you know, that's huge from one little thing to have a 30% lift in sales. I mean, most people would do it. Like, they would do a lot for that. And so yeah. To have it be something so simple is amazing.
That's awesome. So that gives us a pretty good idea of what it is you do now for your clients. I want to go back and talk a little bit about your origin story. I say, you know, every hero has one. So, you know, when did you start to realize that maybe you were different, that maybe you had, you know, these superpowers that you could use to help other people, and you started to discover and develop, you know, the value that you could bring to this world?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I grew up with my parents were entrepreneurs. So to me, it's like, you need money, you just go figure out something and do it. Not like, oh, you go get a job. Like I've always felt a little weird in jobs. I've always had kind of quirky jobs where, you know, I work for Perry and I don't really have this one role. I kind of am like, I do 15 different things and it's very, you know, kind of customized. And I just don't do well with a typical job. And I never have. You know, I was a kid and I was like, you know, maybe 13, and I was at like this youth camp for church for the summer, and I was like making some friendship bracelets, and those people were like, oh, I like those. I made $40 selling them for $1 each over a couple of days. And to me, that's just like, you know, I made stuff out of duct tape. I made like wallets and purses, and I've kind of always been doing that, and I never really realized it was weird until I kind of, you know, I basically, when I ended up working for Perry, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like there's this whole world of entrepreneurs and they're all crazy, like my family, and it's great. And I don't understand the people that can just go do a normal job, and it's great because someone like needs to do that, but it's never been a thing that I could do. I love the freedom of it. I am the kind of person that if I want to work at 2 a.m. on this thing that I suddenly like thought about, I want to be able to just do that. I don't want to have to be like, oh, I have to get up at 7 a.m. and go to my job and do the same thing I do every day. Yeah.
it reminds me a lot of myself, because, you know, I remember I was 13 and just started high school and discovered that people were buying candy at school at the time. So I talked my dad into taking me to the local big box store, and I bought all the candy that people, and like even fancier candy so that you couldn't get at school. And, you know, ooh, I could buy them for cheap. And I started coming to school with a backpack, just like, you know, pounds and pounds of candy in there. And I was selling it for like $1, $2 a pop. I made a couple $1,000s at school, selling, you know, high end candy to all of my friends. I became the candy guy. Lasted all of about 6 weeks before the administration caught on and told me I wasn't allowed to do that at school. But, you know, that's where,
hey, that's pretty good.
that's where I got my start. And I was like, yeah. And, you know, I remember even like further down the road at school, they did a Renaissance fair, and it was like the English department in high school, and everyone had to dress up, and like, you know, you could put up booths and everything. And I was like, oh, I know what I'm going to do. And, you know, everyone had these booths where they were demonstrating things for, you know, the Renaissance fair, like, you know, bringing their birds or their dogs or sewing and stuff like that. I built a water table, and I sold water bottles for 50 cents a pop. Cause, you know, we're in Southern California, it's the summertime. It was like 110 degrees at the thing. So everyone else was doing cool stuff. I walked away from the Renaissance fair and, you know, in 10th grade with several $100 in profits.
I'm not doing show and tell, people. I'm gonna make some money.
Yeah. So yeah, I totally understand where you're coming from. So when did you get into the personality type stuff and the typing for people?
So at this point, I think it's been almost 10 years since I first got into it. It was, you know, a group of friends, the classic kind of MBTI thing. Hey, take this test. Like, I got this, da, da, da. And it's interesting because when I first learned about it, I was with a group that are actually all the same personality as me, but they were like, they're all guys, right? Mm-hmm. And my type is like more heavily logical. And they're like, well, you're more feely than we are. So you're probably like the feely version of it. And so for a long time, I was kind of like, oh, I guess this is it. And I did a lot of research into it because I just found it really interesting and, you know, had other friends take the test, but it didn't really click until I was, let me see. I think it was in 2012. I kind of dug back into it because I was just like, you know, I am really not like most people. And I had, over the course of about 5 years, I was doing school in Northern California. And so I lived with, I think, almost 40 different girls as roommates in at different times over the course of that. At one point, I was living with 14 of them. And it was two houses. There was a guest house in the back, but we were all sharing one kitchen. And so I was like, you know, I'm noticing that I'm not really the same as most other girls that I know. And so I kind of dug back into this, I think, kind of, you know, with that in mind, like, why am I different? And I realized after all of this time, like, I was the same as these other guys, but, you know, it looks a little different when you have different genders, and there's all sorts of stuff that, yeah, all your experience plays into it, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at it, and I find this website, and it's called intpexperience.com. And this website basically dug into something that was completely different than most of the stuff I had seen before, which was something called cognitive functions. And this is actually what breaks down, you know, really what it was the core of what Jung discovered, which is what MBTI is based off of. And the more I got into it, like I actually found myself crying, which is very unusual for me, as I was reading through this, because it described in exquisite detail the way that I kind of understand my feelings and just different things about the way my brain works. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. So after that, I just kind of like dove all the way back in again, and it's kind of hasn't stopped since then. And I started having friends, you know, kind of go through stuff, and, you know, I've actually moved in with four other girls, and moving in, we all thought we were this one type that I had thought I was before. And by the time we all moved out a couple years later, none of us were actually that. And, you know, we realized how easy it is for people to kind of think like, oh, I want to be this kind of person. And it's not actually who you are. And once you get on this path of like actually understanding who you are at the core and what you really want, you end up, so you get this whole kind of growth pattern that you're able to see and like, oh, I'm at this stage and here's what the next stage looks like. And it just kind of made me feel like I actually make sense and I don't have to try and be like other females to be healthy and awesome, but I have my own unique kind of path that I can go on. And it really just, I started kind of just, anytime someone came to me with any kind of like relational thing or whatever, I was always like, oh, well, you know, you're like this. And it sounds like the person you're describing is more like that. And have you tried this? And then they'd come back to me and be like, oh my gosh, like you just changed everything. Like we had this long conversation and, you know, this problem we've had for 10 years, I was able to forgive them. And I mean, so the more and more that happened, the more people were like, you should really do this as a business. And I was like, all right.
And help people. So, which I think dovetails really beautifully into what your superpowers are, right? And you've talked about it a little bit here, but now, You specifically, what do you help people do that helps them solve their problems? And really, like I say, helps them slay their own villains, right?
So yeah. So one of the things is kind of what I mentioned, which is, you know, you look at self-help books and they really work for a couple types of people, and they don't really work for everyone else. Like either they're just like, no, I don't want that, or the advice just doesn't fit. And it's kind of because I think they're written by a certain couple of types and they appeal to those couple types because they're looking for, hey, just tell me what to do. And these people are like usually older and wiser and they're kind of similar, so the advice fits. But what I noticed is that the same advice never works for the same people. Or for everybody. I mean, you know, you could be, say you're in a church and there's a pastor talking and he's like, here's what you do with this problem. Well, some of the people in the audience will be like, oh, that really resonates with me. And they'll go home and they'll be like, this has changed my life. This is amazing. And other people will be like, what? That doesn't make any sense. So they might try it and just feel really uncomfortable, but they feel like it should work for them. And so there's this thing that just drives me crazy that's so common that's like, oh, I tried and people said this is how I should be and I don't know. And, you know, I don't think it's inherently just that people don't know them, like are insecure, but it's kind of this lack of self-awareness of not realizing that, you know, even though something worked really great for your friend, it doesn't mean it's going to work for you. And so for me, my goal is like self-awareness, right? So, I mean, that's a core problem with a lot of the personality tests out there is people take them and they don't understand themselves. And I've kind of been building this test over the course of really a few years, and it's about to get launched into beta finally, where it's like, it kind of walks you through, like people say, even taking the test, they start to like be aware of their own thought processes more, because it kind of helps them to reflect. And, you know, I think like too much introspection is not good, but there's a lot of people that could definitely do with a little bit of more and kind of have a little bit of guidance with it, because it's this thing of just like, you don't know where to look. You're like, you don't even know where to start. So I think I kind of give people this little thing of, hey, you know, you want to just be happier and enjoy your life more and all this kind of stuff, you know, start by understanding yourself a little bit better and then connect with people that are similar to you. You know, if you feel like you're totally different than everyone else, then the advice from them is probably rarely going to work for you. And then you're always going to feel like, oh, everything works for them in life. And, you know, it's like you can go find this community and add a couple people from that. And now all of a sudden you have these people that get you and you talk about your frustrations and like, oh my gosh, I know. And you kind of have similar experiences. And I think really self-awareness kind of leads to fulfillment, to, you know, kind like of everything.
Productivity.
Working out way better. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like productivity is a classic one.
That's really, really cool. And I think it's powerful too, because you hear, you know, you hear people talk about like, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts and they talk about, you know, like, well, all the successful people do these things, or, you know, all the successful people, you know, they all have this morning routine, or they all have this. And you know, success does leave clues, but and there's like truth to some of those things, but some of them, you know, some of the things that you hear, you think, well, I tried to do those things and it just doesn't fit for me. And, you know, I like one of the things that, like, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk says this, and he's like, just ignore your weaknesses and focus on your strengths, right? Because too many people are trying to get their weaknesses to become strengths, and that's just not the way it works. Yeah. You want to work on the things that are strong for you. And what you're, what you talk about is, like, in order to do that, you have to know what your strengths are, right? You have to know what your weaknesses are. And, you know, when someone recommends that you do something that is in one of your weakness piles, you know that, hey, you know what, that's just not going to work for me. And instead of like dealing with those frustrations.
It gives you permission to say, like, I don't have to do everything that everybody throws at me. I can be selective and I can know, like, okay, I know my mom wants the best for me and she wants me to do this thing or thinks it would work. And it's like, you can just know and feel good about saying, you know what, that's okay. I'm good, you know. Or like, you have a lot of people that talk to me and they say, like, oh my gosh, like all of these things that, you know, I thought were bad about me are also my strengths. And I've just never been able to see them in a positive way, because, you know, everyone teases them about them, or, you know, they've always experienced problems because of them and they've never gotten to experience them as strengths. And so that's huge for somebody to realize, like, I'm not just a crappy person, you know. It's like they just were so heavily focused on their weaknesses, and it's not necessarily their fault if the people around you don't see that as a strength. You know, that makes it really hard for you to see it that way. If everyone's always telling you, like, oh, you're, you know, to this and to that, it's going to be hard for you to see, like, oh, but that's what's awesome about me. You kind of need that redirection of, like, hey, usually the things that are your greatest weaknesses, the other side of it is also your greatest strength.
Yeah.
So,
and I think it's really... It's really powerful in a lot of things when you realize that, and, like, you do it in your own life, and you start, like, even with your relationships, like, my wife and I chit-chat all the time. She's like, you know, how could I, you know, be better at this or that or the other thing? And... you know, because she always wants to be like, she wants to be a better wife or a better mom to me and to my kids, and she's like, well, I'm like really clean and organized, because that's just part of my personality. And like, I grew up, and you know, if I had put like my socks inside out in the dirty laundry, my mom probably would have had some sort of psychic premonition, and I would have like got struck by lightning or something. And you know, but you know, and because of that, like, I'm just clean and organized. My wife, on the other hand, is not. She's a very creative person, and she's not as clean and organized than I am. And she's like, I want to be more clean and organized. And I was like, I'm like, if you want to like work on that, that's fine. She's like, but what that leads to is it leads to your incredible creativity that you have, where she does like these incredible, like, original 3D, like, carved cakes, and she's like made T-Rexes out of cake. And she does like dolls, and she does all these other cool things. I'm like, and like, she homeschools our kids, and like the projects and stuff that she comes up with for them. And I'm like, you don't focus on the things that, you know, that are your weaknesses. Like, you know, focus on the things that are your strengths, and don't worry about it. And, you know, I think that it helps us, you know, just knowing that about each other. We don't get on each other's nerves about it. Right. And it helps us be
able to respect that you're different, not, you know, be concerned about it.
Be like, I need you to be like me. No, I need you to be the best version of you. And I think what you're doing really is, it's so powerful for people, because if they could understand themselves and understand the people they work with or the people that they have relationships with, it just helps everything work better. Like a, you know, well-oiled machine, I guess.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk a little bit about your tool belt. What are some of the tools that you use with your clients? It could be psychological tools, or maybe even like tools like Evernote or other things, whatever it is that you use on a regular basis that really helps you do the work that you do for your clients.
So on a practical basis, I love all of the Google Docs. Everything that's kind of like cloud-based is super helpful for me working with my team, because we can be like, hey, like, let's write this thing together. We can do suggestions and comments, and we can kind of go back and forth and really refine stuff. Honestly, even though I don't, I don't love social media at times, but it tends to like not affect me that negatively. Most people I know complain about it all the time. I'm like, I just kind of do what I need to do and then get off of it. But, I use that for refining. I'm very careful with my personality descriptions. I've had tons of comments already. They're not even officially like necessarily released, but I write them with the people of that type. Mm-hmm. What you commonly see is that people, say there's somebody like me, they're like, I'm going to write all these descriptions. Well, the farther away from your own understanding of yourself, like, the more different they are from you. And when you don't have people around you like that, the more vague and theoretical they get, right? And so you can get way off because you're just kind of guessing. Mm-hmm. And so what I've done is, because I see that happen so much, I've kind of written them with people. And so some of those collaborators are in other countries, and I write it with them over Google Docs, and we kind of chat about it. And then I'm able to publish it into the Facebook group or a forum for that type. And they're able to give lots of really good feedback, because I want it to be more universal. I don't want it to be really specific to the one person I collaborated with and then not work for everyone else. So I love being able to kind of just find, here's 1,000 people that, have already said, hey, this is what I'm like, and I can get their feedback, instantaneously. So that stuff helps me a lot. And then there's also, I love stuff, and I want to get more into this, but there's like the 5 dysfunctions of a team is a common tool for working teams through stuff. And I've kind of read through that, and I don't officially use it yet, because I don't even know if you need to get some kind of certification to, be cool with that. But I do like giving people that as a tool and saying, hey, read through this. You'll probably laugh and cry, and you'll see all these things of reflecting your own issues as a team when it comes to bigger businesses.
Yeah.
And, it's amazing how they, and they recommend that you go through and you get a personality expert to kind of help with a lot of that team dynamic stuff. So that's kind of fun to have them just kind of see, like, I think sometimes you're not aware of how many problems you're having until you kind of read it in a story, which is how that book is kind of written. They have a little fable, and you read through that and you start to go, oh man, like, we totally have that. And it sometimes you need to kind of make that awareness of the need before you can really like help them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's useful for that. And then I'm the kind of person that kind of gets lots and lots of ideas all the time. So I have like tons of notebooks, and I kind of try and like scatter pens all around the house. And the other night I woke up at like 2 a.m. and was writing stuff down. And
got my big notebooks that I keep on my desk and around everything.
Yeah. And I hate ones with lines. They're always just, they drive me crazy. So I love just being able to, you can draw or whatever. I don't even really draw, but I don't like the lines. I don't know.
Yeah. I do the,
stuff. Do
the same thing. I never use the notebooks if they have lines on them. I finally got a big blank one. I was like, if it's blank, then I can use it.
Yep. It just, I don't know. I just feel constricted. The main thing for me too is, I actually have right now I have 3 businesses on top of my job. I'm about to start a 4th one. And, for me, I'm on the computer all day. And so to be able to just go and have my notebook is just really like, it's good for my brain. I can feel that I'm able to think a lot more clearly if it's just me and my notebook. I'm away from my computer, put it away. Because I don't know. I get to this point where if I'm trying to be creative on the computer, I'm just kind of like, my brain is like, nope, I don't want to do it. So that helps me a lot.
So it's, it's changing your environment a little bit to bring out your creativity. Yeah. I've noticed that helps a lot for myself too. Like, cause I do a lot of work on my computer, and then like when I've noticed if I need to do creative stuff on my computer, I will leave my desk. I'll take my computer with me and go like sit outside. And I have to change my environment, because like my desk is not creative. My desk is like, get work done. So I have to.
Yeah, it's funny because, I feel like it's one of those things that it's definitely more stark for everybody. But I feel like even just something like, when I would go to work instead of working from home, I would go to work and I would come home and I would just change my clothes. because it was kind of this thing telling my brain, like, all right, you're not at work anymore. And I kind of needed that, you know, even on top of the physical transition. I feel like intentionally changing your environment, it stops your brain from getting super exhausted. Yeah, if you're in the same spot for 10 hours on the same computer doing the same kind of stuff, even if you kind of change tasks, your brain, it's like it doesn't really fully get it. And it's just kind of like, I'm not in that mode. So yeah, I love that. I love being able to physically shift things to tell your brain, like, okay, now we're doing a different thing. And it seems to make a big difference.
Yeah. And I know I do the same thing in my life. So hopefully that's something our listeners can pick up on. You know, change your environment if you need to change what you're working on. It helps a lot.
Are you tired of trying to write webinars that don't consistently convert? How would you like to have a webinar that effortlessly created sales in your online business? You can. Introducing the Webinar Alchemy Workshop. Webinar Alchemy Workshop is an online masterclass that will help you write incredibly persuasive webinars for your online courses quickly and easily. Using what you learn in this class, you can build a webinar that educates your entire audience while still creating sales. For a limited time, you can purchase this masterclass for only $7, and you'll get the exact framework I've personally used to help my clients sell more than $1 million worth of online coaching and training just over the last year. Simply text the word ALCHEMY, A-L-C-H-E-M-Y, to 444-999, and I'll send you all the details.
The music is by Purple Planet Music. Visit www.purple-planet.com.
Working on it, it helps a lot. So,
yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about your mission for Type in Mind. You know, I talk about, you know, Spider-Man fights to save New York, Batman fights to save Gotham, Google fights to index the entire world's information, right? So we can search it. What is Type in Mind's mission?
You know, for me, so a lot of it comes down to the self-awareness, but I feel like there's a couple specific types, and they are really misunderstood by the general population. And what's really sad is they have so many gifts and they kind of end up just being ignored or pushed to the side because they don't necessarily have the ability maybe to sell themselves. Even though they have like an amazing brain, maybe they're just not as good at like knowing how to present that to people. Or, you know, you see this a lot with maybe like you have mathematicians or programmers or something like that, where it's like they have skills that are really needed. And yet when it comes to actually like presenting them, you know, there's usually a trade-off, right? So you could have a really amazing mathematical brain and not so much socially. And what's hard is like, you know, for me, I found that I really like, you know, doing all the math stuff or, you know, doing all this really complex theoretical stuff. But then when it comes to actually, you can't just study it. Like you actually need to share it with people to feel fulfilled. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's really tough because I would love to just be learning all day. But you have to actually develop these skills to share it and teach it. And so I want to find these people and these types that are really, really intelligent and help them actually find ways to share their stuff. Because I feel like there's so many of them that we're just missing out on all of the knowledge that they have and their unique ways of thinking and stuff like that. And I want to help them, you know, specifically there's one type where I feel like often they really, really struggle in their teenage years. And I think it's because as parents, they're quite rare and they're quite different. And so parents, you know, don't really know how to parent them because they're just not what they expected necessarily. And they're usually very different from them as parents. So things like that, where it's like, there's just this clash and it's like, you've got this beautiful person and they have an amazing mind. And yet they can end up having a really crappy life because they're misunderstood. And
language. They don't understand themselves to start with, so they can't.
Yeah, exactly. So they can't say, no, I'm more like this, because the language is missing. It's mm-hmm. It's like being mute, you know? You're like, you know, you think about how much, you know, there's actually these studies where they saw that deaf people, if you even teach them sign language before a certain age, as long as you teach them some kind of language, they're able to think like, you know, like anyone else. But if they don't learn a language by a certain age, then their thinking is actually impaired, because even though they don't necessarily, you know, you don't always think everything consciously, but it's like even the unconscious seems to be impaired by not having language. And it's like, you know, even our computer, the fact that we're having a conversation right now, it only exists because of language, not only because we're speaking, but because of the code that underlies, you know, the software that we're using and the operating system. And it's like everything is based on language. Even DNA is a code, right? So it's just, you know, for me, it's like, it's what I'm passionate about is language. I want everyone to understand themselves, and not just that, but have the language to express it to other people, because that's where the communication comes in.
Absolutely. And, you know, it reminds me of something I tell people in jest about my children, that my children are my social experiments. And I have a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old. And when my son was born, I remember I didn't know anything about kids, and other than like I've got this little tiny child who's like a completely blank slate, and I don't know what to do, so I might as well like experiment on them, right? And what I mean by that when I say that is, I always wanted to test the commonly held beliefs. You know, like, well, children can't learn things, so why would you take time to explain it to them? And things like that. So, like, I remember, just a couple of years ago, my son was 2, and we were in the backyard, and he was throwing a ball. He wanted to try and get it up on the patio, and he couldn't do it because he was standing, like, right under the patio. So, and it was, like, straight up. And so I sat down and I talked to him, and he's 2 years old. He's like, he can count to 10, basically. And that's like his language abilities, and say mom and dad, and like, that's it. And I sat there and I explained to him the whole geometry and the physics behind why he couldn't throw it up there. And like, I talked to him about, if you had a shallower parabolic arch on your throw, you can take that same like amount of work you're doing. You can get it on there if you step back like 10 feet. And, my stepdad comes out. He's like, why are you explaining physics to your 2-year-old? And he's like, 2-year-olds can't understand that stuff. And I was like, I don't know that. I don't know what he can understand or what he can't understand. And about 2 weeks later, we come back outside and he wants to throw the ball again. And he looks up at me, Daddy, and he goes, he said parabolic arch. He said the word. And he stepped back and he threw the ball and got it on the porch. And I was like, boom. And it's interesting because,
oh my gosh,
because what I've noticed is over the years of teaching my kids, the bigger their vocabulary is, the more advanced their play becomes, the more advanced their imagination becomes. And it's like, it's like a direct correlation that the more I teach my kids about the language we speak, the more vibrant their imaginary worlds become. And it's like, it's like a direct correlation. That the better they become at communicating, the more the more thoughts they're capable of holding in their head. And I've got this like working theory now, which you just talked about the deaf children. If they learn a language, they can think better. That I've noticed, like my son now, because we spend a lot of time with language on with him. He's 6 years old, and people talk to them like he doesn't talk like a 6-year old. Like it's like talking with a young teenager, and they're like they're just blown away. And it's like I think it has a lot to do with language because his level of thinking is not determined by his age or his status. It's determined by the amount of language he has a command over. And so I don't know. I think that's really fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean it's people often say get your kids to read, and I think it's because like. For me, I was 3 and I was begging my mom to read, for her to teach me. And she was busy. She was doing nursing at the time. I was born in Ireland. And, so we moved to the States and, she wasn't working anymore. And so she's like, I was 4 at this point. She's like, okay, I'll teach you how to read. And so, by the time she took me to go to kindergarten, I was already reading like chapter books, and she was like, what's she going to learn? It's like, oh, the colors and the numbers. And she's like, what? Like she's already reading, like, and so she homeschooled me. I was homeschooled through everything because it was just, and I finished school a year early and, I kind of just taught myself, kind of from like 11 on. I mean, she would ask me my questions, but I was like, just give me the textbook. I'll go read it. And I'll, and it's just, she told me, when I was like 2, we were having like sophisticated conversations, and I don't remember that, but I think it's like when you treat your kid as just a person that's small and, they don't know as much as you, but they have the capacity to really like kind of know anything, it's limited, but it's like, I feel like so many times we treat kids as if they're just like, have nothing going on almost up there. And we forget that they kind of have all of these thoughts of their own and, they can't express themselves the way that we can. But yeah, I think like you're really empowering them by giving them that kind of language, and they might not remember everything, but that's not the point. It's kind of just to expand their world and give them that ability to imagine, like you're saying, and to understand concepts that, if you didn't tell them about it, then they might just not ever,
My children have consistently surprised me with what they're capable of understanding. A couple of examples. My son learned to read an analog clock at 2 years old. and he could read a calendar by the time he was 2.5. And those are all things that you wouldn't expect a 2-year-old. You know, like he can barely run. Yeah. Like he falls over.
Like
when
why
he
would
runs.
He even? What 2-year-old is trying to read a calendar or an analog clock? You know,
he thought it was fascinating. It. And you know, he's 6 years old now, and he would just barely be starting kindergarten. But he's doing second and third grade curriculum for a lot of his work. With the exception of like writing, because he's 6, he can't hold a pencil still yet. He doesn't have the dexterity. So I think a lot of times we hold our children back based on the physical, like, you know, it takes a while to get your body to that level. Their mind, like they come out of, you know, there's a reason why they're like 1/3 head when they come out, right?
It's so true.
Because, you know, they have these powerful, amazing minds. I think it was just very poignant what you said, that if you can help someone get the language to express themselves and express what's in their heads, then they can communicate with other people. And they can be more productive in their lives, and they'll be able to, the value that they have, they can give it to the world in a far greater capacity because they understand themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but long way to say, I think your mission is very cool.
Thank you.
So, transition a little bit here. Talk a little bit about your own personal heroes. You know, Frodo had Gandalf, Luke had Obi-Wan Kenobi, Robert Kiyosaki had his rich dad. Who were your heroes? Were they speakers, authors, peers that were just a couple of years ahead of you? And how important were they to what you've accomplished so far in your life?
I definitely have to say my parents. You know, they've been entrepreneurs my whole life, but they've never had this hugely successful business, or, you know, they've never had this like huge kind of breakthrough happen, and yet they still keep doing it. And it's like being able to just say like, look, this is how I am. I'm an entrepreneur. And not just say, well, if it's not working, then, you know, I guess that's not me. I should just go get a job. And there have been times they considered it, you know, but it's just like at the end of the day, you know, they're just entrepreneurs. They can't help it. Right. And so like we just started a business with our whole family, you know, basically as an agency for startups, because we're like, hey, we've been doing all this stuff separately. Why not do it all together? But just seeing that they always keep going, and that, you know, even when they're kind of like, I don't know how we're going to pay the bills this month, it's not like, well, why don't we just go get jobs and, you know, go back to the normal, you know, easier, because it's easier sometimes to go for the stability and that kind of thing. And yet they never do that. I would have to say Perry Marshall as well. You know, there's not many bosses that will let you kind of have a job the way I have, where I get to kind of, you know, say, hey, what about this thing? And kind of come to them with all these crazy ideas and, you know, just kind of move around and work on different things. And I never would have thought I would have enjoyed the whole world of marketing and sales. I thought it was just, you know, completely just, you know, all of these people manipulating each other. And I was like, I want no part of it. And I started working for Perry. And it was actually through a friend of mine. She was like, hey, we need someone else for customer service. You want to come join us? And I was like, hey, I love the idea. I love the idea of working online and not having to go in. And sure, great, sign me up, whatever. And I got to go through all of Perry's material. And so I started going through these courses. And like, one thing that he's known for is, in a space where a lot of people are just trying to scam people out of their money, he's actually got integrity.
Yeah.
And he's also kind of similar to me in personality. And so kind of having that, where he gets into that theoretical kind of principle stuff, but he also is like, hey, if you're ripping people off, I don't even want to talk to you. Like, I'm here to help people. The main core of it for me was understanding that marketing is really just about connecting the right people with each other.
Yeah.
And realizing like, oh my gosh, like my parents, you know, they need marketing. That's like kind of the main thing. They do awesome stuff, but it's just people don't know about them. And so realizing, oh my gosh, marketing is the solution to the problem of all of these amazing people that have these great skills, but they're just not making enough money because they don't know how to market themselves, because that's not their skill. And realizing that it can be just as, it's a tool, just like I said, you know, it's like with type, it can be used to stereotype and make people angry and put them in boxes, or it can be used to change people's lives. You know, marketing can be a horrible thing when it's used by people that don't have good intentions, but it also can change people's lives and get them to a place where, you know,